Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello and welcome to At Your Instinct. My name is Morgan McCarr, and I am joined by Jordan Kennedy and Dave Nolan today. And we are just off of our M14 pre-release weekend, and we all had a fairly good time. I think some of us better than others, obviously. But we just wanted to start the show with obviously talk about what is on everyone's minds. Finally getting to play in an M14 environment. And, what our experiences were. So we'll go ahead and we'll get started with that. So, as some of you might know, if you follow our Twitter, Jordan and I were paired up at our local card shop. We did a midnight two-headed giant tournament. Now, Jordan, was this your first two-headed giant tournament?
It's first game of two-headed giant in my life.
Yeah, me too, me too.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I liked my partner, but... Yeah,
I mean, that's fine. Who doesn't like me?
I was going to say, it's actually my first two-headed giant tournament as well.
Really?
That's believe it or not, yes.
What?
and you got paired with another Pro Tour qualified player that we have locally. And I heard your seal pool was pretty nutty. Is that correct?
It was okay. It was a little awkward. It actually wasn't as nutty as it sounded, I guess.
Okay.
It was fine.
What did it sound like?
two ex-Chandra. So, yeah, we had two of the Chandras and one of the Ogre battle drivers. Wars. Yeah, yes. Which that guy's sweet, but like the rest of our red was terrible.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So we kind of just ended up splashing two Chandras. It was no big deal.
We're splashing two red card. No biggie.
Yeah.
No worries. Okay. Well, fair enough. How did you guys end up doing?
So I was paired up with Andrew Morrow. I'll name drop. and we ended up going 4-1 and finished.
That's not bad.
So got like 14 packs or something, but,
that's pretty sick.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I gotta be honest, I wasn't planning on going to the pre-release. I had other plans this weekend, so, and I wasn't really interested in two-headed giant, so I, just didn't really have any plans to go, and then kind of last minute, I was like, alright. And I called the band. Hey man, you going? He's just like, yeah, I'm like, alright, you want to team up? Sure. Okay, so.
It's sick.
Yeah, I mean, I played two-headed giant, like, one other time in a cube draft, but not like anything sand. So I actually, it was kind of weird because I didn't know a lot of the rules. Like I kind of, basics, like you start with 30 life and how to turn, but like specific card interactions, like things that say like creatures you control, like I didn't know how all that worked. So it was definitely new territory for me because I usually am pretty good with all the rules and everything.
Yeah. But there's some interesting ones, especially specifically with M14, because there was like that the cauldron was a pretty interesting interaction because it said your opponents and then so your opponents would lose 4 life if they sacrificed a creature. Specifically the newt, I think it was. So basically you would lose 8, which is pretty significant in that format. But yeah, there were definitely some unique interactions that I don't think you would necessarily get with a different type of format. But it was definitely interesting. Jordan and I, our sealed pool was pretty meh. Like, we didn't really have... Like, we had an Ogre Battle Driver as well, but we had to cobble... We had a solid blue-white flyer stack. Like, we had some Air Servants. We had cards in the blue-white flyers. We had two of the Warden of Evil's Isles, which was pretty sick, so... And we had That deck was fine. It's just your regular, Corset Blue-White Flyers deck. Always a viable strategy. everything past that was just a bunch of junk, like, just terrible. Our black was garbage, like, we didn't have anything good there. Our green was alright, our red was alright, and then, like, our white was borderline garbage, that was left over from the blue-white Flyers deck, because there was some sliver stuff in there. So, we didn't have a critical amount of slivers, so we couldn't just do the Naya slivers deck. We did have the Ogre Battle Driver, which is pretty awesome, but we also had Young Pyromancer. Now, some interesting interaction, like, our green-red deck I don't think was very good, but it was really cute, like, we had some really cute interactions with it.
Right.
Like, we had Pyromancer, and we also had the red-red one, the Molten Birth, I think it's called.
Yeah, the flip a coin thing, yeah.
Yeah, so you put you put 2 1/1s into play, and then if you have Pyromancer, you put another 1/1 into play, and then you flip a coin, and if you win, you get it back, which is awesome. So we had two of those.
We had a game where I flipped Dave, no shit. I'm the luckiest player ever. We had a game where I flipped heads 4 times. Like, on the same one, and then I had another one in hand. We ended up losing that game somehow.
Yeah, we still lost. It's irrelevant.
But afterwards, I showed him the other one. He goes, are you kidding me? Like, it was the best.
So I guess you didn't have the Battle Driver in play when you did that.
That's correct.
We also did get to do that as well. So we also did have Ogre Battle Driver in the Molten Birth on there. So that was also fun to make 2 3-3s with haste. And then attack in, and then be able to do it next turn as well. So, that was the other cute interaction that we had. But it just, we didn't have enough removal, I don't feel. Like, it just, we couldn't deal with the Flyers deck that was there. We played against, like, an all-blue counterspell deck, so anything that we tried to resolve was just countered, so
that
it was
gross.
Yeah.
Like, that match was gross, because, like, we would play like a win condition. Like, we would effectively, like, we'd have the card to effectively stomp his way to win, which in turn we were gonna win. And he would spend like 30 seconds looking at the cancel in his hand, deciding if he wanted to win or lose. Like, that had to be his thought process. It was like, oh man, if they resolve that, they win. If they don't, they lose. Should I counter that? I don't know. Oh, I guess I'm gonna win Magic. Cancel! Like, it was that long. It just blew my mind.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible playing against that deck. And I remembered how much, like, I hate being on the receiving end of a counterspell. Like, just infuriates me so much. And then I realized that I'm the reason why people hate Magic these days, because there's no good blue counters. And my people have complained so much.
So I've come to grips with it. Yeah, I'm a blue mage, but I've come to grips with it. You know, blue's had its time. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean,
no, but I think, like, as far as Two-Headed Giant goes, I mean, I think it's pretty interesting some of the how the card evaluations kind of change in that format versus regular limited. Like a card like Spellburst, is that what it's called? Spell Blast? Or the X counter spell is?
Yeah, with X of Corinne Vanagos.
Yeah, like that card's just terrible, right? But in Two-Headed Giant, you pretty much play any counterspell.
Right.
You know, because the games tend to go long. So you just want to stop whatever your opponent is trying to do, you know, or just stop their big bombs, essentially. So, I mean, that card's perfectly reasonable in Two-Headed Giant, whereas otherwise you'd never play it, most likely.
I definitely, you know, edited my deck after the first round and been like, yeah, I need these in here. Because, like, you just need to play. You need to have answers. You need to have main deck answers for, like, caveat cards that people might just have. And, like, that's a weird concept to have in a limited game, because you're like, well, I don't want, like, a naturalize in my main deck, but sometimes you, with One-Headed Giant, since it's one match, like, you play once, sometimes you just need that one card answer. That's a clean, efficient answer to an artifact or an enchantment. Especially with M14, like, naturalize is, because I did another pre-release after the Two-Headed Giant on Sunday, and, like, people were telling me, like, naturalize is almost a main deck card just because of all the enchantments that are in the block. I mean, that are in the set, I should say. And there are a lot of enchantments, which a lot of people are inferring are, you know, plants for Theros, which might, you know, people are saying, like, oh, that's probably going to be an enchantment-based block. Which, you know, being how much there is, it would shock me. Maybe they're just going for more harder to deal with permanents, which could also be something, but it's likely just a lead-in to Theros, just to get people used to it. So, maybe, you know, maybe that is the deal. It's just that, you know, maybe with this one you might play a random naturalized in the main. Still think it's probably not where you want to be, but who knows? Probably
yeah, I mean, draft. I played a Bramble Crush main, which I normally wouldn't be too excited about, but it's just it's a nice clean answer to any random planeswalk or anything somebody might have.
Exactly. So. But I really enjoyed doing Two-Headed Giant. It's something that I would like to do again just because of the different interactions and how things change. So it makes it fresh, so you're not just going like, oh, I'm just going to pre-release, I'm just going to do this, I'm just going to do that. Like, it was nice having a different experience playing cards.
Can we talk about pre-releases in general? Like, I don't know, we talked about before the show a little bit, Morgan, that I'm kind of over them. I don't know. Like, at least the Midnight... Sorry, I guess I should specify the Midnight specifically. Like, around 1 a.m., I was just like, eh, I could have done this at noon tomorrow and had just as good of a day. Like,
right.
I don't know.
I mean, I enjoy it because it's exciting. And, like, you don't necessarily do it because you're getting in value or you're going to be playing against tough competition. You just do it because it's fun. And, like, if it's not fun, then you probably should do it. Like, that's what it breaks down to. If you're not enjoying yourself, then you shouldn't go.
Oh, yeah, that's true, I guess.
I gotta say, this is probably the most fun pre-release I've ever been to, which is weird because, like, normally I'm pretty competitive, and sometimes it's hard to turn that off. You know what I mean? Like, so even when I go to regular pre-releases, it's just kind of like, I'm still, just trying to play as tight as possible and, doing my best to win and whatever else, but it's like, this one, it was just, I was just there, it was just loose, just having fun and, when you have a teammate, it was just a different experience, I guess.
Yeah, because you have someone that you can bond with and you're just having a good time. You can actually talk and make decisions with and really have someone to give good feedback and know that they are only there for you to succeed because your success, their success is relies somewhat upon your success. So I think that's kind of an interesting concept.
Right, but like pre-releases in general, I try to hit them if I can, but I don't really go out of my way. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times the Midnight ones are the easiest for me to do because a lot of weekends I'm busy, with family stuff or whatever. So, like it's kind of not doing anything else from midnight to 6 in the morning or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Though sometimes my wife doesn't like it when I sleep all day the next day, but it's the price you pay.
Whatever.
Price of progress, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I can understand where you're coming from though, Jordan, because sometimes it's just like, you almost don't want to do well if you're really tired. Like, you worked all day that day and you're like, oh man, it's 4 a.m. and I kind of just want to go to bed.
That's how I felt. Like, we went out, we had dinner, and then, like, we go back and we open, like, a mediocre pool, and I was just like, eh. Like, I know we're not going to win the thing with this. Like,
right.
In a room of that size, like, with that many people, someone's going to open up the nuts, and, like, you're not going to beat them on your best day. So I was just kind of like, eh, whatever, I don't really care. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, like, Two at a Giant's fun. I wouldn't have minded to do it at a time that was more apt for sleeping, but, like, I do think Two-Headed Giants are fun, and then I did think, like, pre-release was fun, just not that specific time frame. I don't know, maybe my complaint's just more, like, whiny, but...
But see, like, the nice thing is, like, with Two-Headed Giant and, like, capping it where how they capped it, like, it was nice, because it was only 5 rounds. And in theory, like, if they had done, like, 100 cap or something like that, that would have been, that would have been pretty bad as far as that's concerned, because that's what they did with a lot of the Midnight stuff for, like, RTR block, and it the Midnight event was, like, till 9 a.m. the next day, which is just terrible.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, five rounds is really nice, and I think, like, that's all I ever want to pre-release for is 5 rounds, at most.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like, you guys have any... Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, do you guys have any sweet stories, like, other than... flipping heads 5 times or whatever.
I mean, that was fun. Hey, listen. It was way cooler than it sounds. Let's see.
Because if you don't, I have a sweet story.
No.
Okay, yeah, go ahead with yours. I can't think of anything outside my head.
Okay. I don't even know if you guys heard about this, because I think you might have left by the time. Did you guys leave before the end of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we left before the last round.
So this was in the last round. We're 3-1, and we're playing against another one of our buddies in the group, and his friend. And so my deck's kind of like a green white, just mostly just creatures, just kind of dirtles. And Andrew's deck is kind of a blue-black control. You know, it's got a lot of card draw, counter spells, removal, got some flyers. And then that was the deck that we splashed the two Chandras in. So really, really late in the game, right? It's like turn 20 or something at least, and you're just going on. I think Andrew's got like 10 cards left in his deck. And, you know, just everybody's got like, you know, 12 lands in play, you know, bunch of creatures in play, can't really attack profitably. It's just kind of, we're just kind of passing back and forth. Nobody's really doing anything. So Andrew finally gets a Chandra in play to stick. And he uses the zero ability, flips Rise of the Dark Realms, casts that, returns about.
Oh god.
It was like at least 12 creatures. It was like,
oh no!
And then like, at this time, right, it's like 5 in the morning. And I'm like, right. We should have attacked first. Oh well, whatever. So we returned all the creatures. One of them being a clone, which copies Archaeomancer, which returns Rise of the Dark Realm.
Rise of the Dark Realm.
Oh no, the combo!
Oh god.
So then we're like, go to attack, and then I'm like, I don't know, just attack with everything. I don't even want to think about this anymore. It's like, you know, 5:30. Like, I don't know, I just want to get out of here. Just, it's fine.
That's so sick.
Yeah, that was pretty much the awesome.
I can't believe you were playing Rise of the Dark Realms and sealed.
Yeah, the card was sweet.
So you just grimmered your opponents to death. That's the best.
Yeah. Like, well, I think that card's really terrible in every other format. Like, but like in Two-Edged Giant, it's awesome because like you get 4 graveyards to pull creatures out of.
That's
and
true.
The games tend to go long, so.
Oh, that card would be sick in EDH too.
Yeah, it was perfect. But yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Well,
but yeah, that was pretty much, that was the end of the tournament for us. That was like,
yeah. I gotta say, like, I think it's a good note to end on, and we'll kind of move on to another big thing that's happening in the community is the Hall of Fame. There is Hall of Fame voting that is gonna be going on here soon, and there are definitely some spicy candidates. Obviously, as a competitive player, you know, it could be something that you know, maybe that's why you're playing competitively, it's because eventually you wanna see, you know, you wanna get your Hall of Fame ring. Now, obviously, it's definitely a long road to that, but it's something that's important to talk about because it's, you know, we kind of look at these people as the pillars of our community, and I think it's something good that we definitely discuss on the show. Now, we kind of wanted to, you know, start this discussion with, you know, what does, you know, the Hall of Fame mean to you, and to me personally, you know, if someone's inducted to the Hall of Fame, I think that they are something that has, that they have, you know, consistently contributed to Magic as being a competitive player and being able to consistently, you know, rise to the top amongst their peers, as well as someone that can also contribute to the community in some facet and make it a better place for future players than when they came into it. And I think that is something that kind of makes it for me a lot of the time with our Hall of Famers. What do you guys think?
I think that's pretty spot on. I mean, I like that they have a Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I definitely think that it's nice to be able to recognize, you know, those players, especially, you know, the guys that have been playing competitively at a high level for a long time.
Right.
But also like some of the older players that kind of real life kind of took over, you know, and they kind of fell off.
Yeah. You
know, I mean, it's nice to have those guys still be involved, still be invited to every pro tour that, you know, you still see Kai Bud, you know, show up to, you know, maybe up one pro tour per year, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Where normally you might not ever get to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
What about you, Jordan?
I don't know. I think like, I don't know, and Dave, I'm sure you'll have an opinion on this too, like, should our hall be more for the great, specifically just the great players, or should it be for people who contributed to our game overall too? Like in sports, right, like the NFL, MLB, they honor people who weren't necessarily the best players as well. They honor coaches or managers or, people who contributed to the health of the game as a whole. So, like, someone like Brian David Marshall, who'll never get 150 pro points in his life three times over, but has contributed a ton to our game, and he's someone who should be considered for our Hall of Fame because of the impact he's made on Magic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, that's actually funny that you say that, because I was going to bring up that same point. That, like, I think, you know, BDN's been around forever. I mean, he's been doing commentary since, I don't even know, like, going all the way back at least 10 years, right? Like, maybe even 15?
Yeah, no, he's...
So, like, going back, like, you know, pretty much to the beginning, where they... I don't know when they first started streaming.
Right? Like,
right. But yeah, I mean, I think people like him should definitely get in. I'm not sure... Who else? I mean, obviously there's no managers or things like that, so it's hard to say who else would get in. But yeah, I mean, I think he should get in, just or at least be recognized in that capacity.
Yeah. I mean, you have like people like Flores, right? Like who could be on there. And then you think like maybe 5 years down the line, Cedric Phillips in his current role, you know, a guy who has had tournament success, but not like Hall of Fame tournament success. But at the same time, you're not in this community if you don't know who Cedric Phillips is.
Right.
So maybe someone like him, I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on how you define the Hall of Fame. Technically, it's the Pro Tour Hall of Fame.
Right.
So that's why they have, you know, the cap on, or I guess like the, you need to hit 150 pro points to even be considered, you know what I mean? But, you know, I think there should be something for the other people that kind of make the Pro Tour what it is or have contributed over the years.
Yeah. I mean, then I guess like when you think there's a billion different tournament circuits out there across a billion different sites and stuff like that, it's hard to keep track of every single person's thing they've done everywhere. So I hear that. I mean, there's one definitive way of measuring how good someone is, and that's through the Pro Tour. So, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So who do you vote for?
Who would I vote for? I mean, well, I don't have a vote, but.
Who would you vote for? You got three votes. Who do you vote for?
Three votes? All right. Well, LSV has to get in.
Right.
I mean, I'm Hands married down. To him, so. So yeah, he would have to get in. I would love to see Chris Piccolo get in. He's kind of an old school guy, and this is his last chance. And I think, I believe he was like very close to getting in before, maybe one vote short or something like that.
Yeah, a while ago he was very close.
Yeah. And then we just kind of hit this string of years where there's been like just all these insane guys that are just automatic. And you know what I mean? He's kind of been lost in the shuffle. But yeah, I'd like to see him get in, so I'd probably vote for him.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at, like, not to interrupt you, but I was just looking at the current members, but there are so many people that have won invitational, like, have invitational cards that are in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame, and it's just like, we can't let Battling Mage not be in the Pro Tour, like, right? Like, we can't let that happen.
right. And it's kind of one of those things we were talking about. I mean, he doesn't have... Just the pure.
He's got family, yeah.
But he doesn't stack up stat wise to a lot of these guys, right? But
sure.
He contributed a lot. He did commentary back in the day, you know, when that was first, you know, when that was like brand new, you know, he was doing that, and you know, he was kind of one of the, outspoken members of the community that you know kind of was very against cheating and all these things when that was kind of run rampant back then. So I'd like to see him get in, and then I like Shouto Yasoka a lot. I guess it's hard to say if he's underrated, but I feel like he kind of gets overlooked a lot, and he's just really good. He always puts up consistent finishes. He's been player of the year before. I don't believe he has any actual Pro Tour top eights, but he has a lot of like top 16s, top 32s type finishes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people kind of downgrade him for that because he doesn't have the top eights. But, I mean, he pretty much dominated the Players' Championship last year.
Yeah.
I don't believe he gets to play that much anymore either. He just kind of shows up and just rushes people. So, I think it'd be nice to see him get some recognition.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, like, it kind of sucks when we say, so you have three votes, that means you really only have two because of LSV. You know, like, he could sweep this vote easy, hands down.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, Brian Kibler's blog on bmkgaming.com was pretty interesting on who he'd vote for. He wasn't afraid to call people out, man. Like, he talked about Pakula, about how he would have the same vote that you did. But he was like, who did he talk about that was in here that was really funny? Sato. He was just like, so we're going to put a cheater and a staller into the Hall of Fame? You guys are geniuses. Like, it's just like, oh, man, not afraid to call him out, Brian Kibler. But...
Well, he could be kind of defensive about it, though, you know, because he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I mean, like...
So he's kind of be like, oh, I don't want to be...
associated like this, right?
Exactly.
No, yeah, that's a good point. Wow, that shows how old Kibler is, man. Like, this is LSV's first year of eligibility, and Kibler's been in it for a couple years. Like, Kibler's been here a while.
He's been around for a while, yeah.
Jeez. Wow.
I will say, I do like Saito a lot, just as a player. But yeah, I mean, obviously some of the stuff he's done has been kind of shady, and I don't fault anybody for not voting for him, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, he is, I think he is actually, you know, one of the best players ever. In one of the best deck designers, deck builders. I mean, even now. So, you know, hopefully he gets his act together and, you know, I would like to see him in eventually, but yeah, I don't think he's going to get too many votes this year.
No, I mean, I agree. We didn't talk about Ben Stark. What do you think about Ben? Like, he's pretty good. Ben Stark.
Yeah, he's excellent. I mean, It's tough just to pick three. I mean, luckily,
I know,
he's at
right?
five.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, Ben Stark's obviously, you know, he's won a Pro Tour and top eight another one in the last couple of years here. So, he's obviously been pretty consistent on the tour. He's been around for a long time too.
You made a good point. You can't just pick three, you know, like,
yeah.
It's good to pick everybody I think deserves to be in there. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'm kind of glad I don't have a vote.
No, right, like, how do you choose, you know, and then, like, you regret it for the rest of forever if you vote wrong, like, but,
eh.
I don't know. So, I don't know, Morgan, what do you think? Anything?
I'm gonna go with, LSV, and, Pakula. I really think that Pakula, I just think that, you know, he is someone that is very well known in the community, and he's very outspoken. Like, even though he may not get to play as much as he does, he definitely is very active as far as like on Twitter, and, you know, he has shown up in SCG events and Top 8's Legacy events, which is very complex. So he still can play. He's still very competitive, and it's a shame that we can't let someone that maybe put Magic on a back burner for his family into the Pro Tour just because of, you know, these people that may not have that going on necessarily. So I would think that would be a shame for him not to kind of make it in there. I mean, LSV is just a shoo-in because he's so impactful. Everyone, just like Chris, you know, everyone knows LSV. Everyone, you know, that's the, you know, their dream is to be, you know, as you know, nice, friendly, and jovial, and just who wouldn't want that person to be a pillar of the Magic community and someone that would be inducted into the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. I mean, that's just a no brainer.
I mean, like,
go ahead.
No, okay. I mean, like, we all read Duke's article about Jun with M14. At the bottom of that, there's that story about Luis who hit, like, Reed's friend sat down to sleeve his deck at sealed PTQ and was running late because, you know, if you're new to the sleeve, a sealed PTQ, it's way too little time to build your deck than you would think. And, like, Luis Scott Vargas sat down to help this guy sleeve his deck before going on to play his top eight of his Pro Tour in Philly. Like, and he just did it, said, yep, have a great day, and left. And there was no fame, no nothing. Like, LSV's just a good guy. And, you know, I have this warm spot in my heart for the Reed Dukes and the LSVs of the world who are, like, just such good people, they can almost do no wrong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, those are the types of guys that you want to represent your game, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. They're the ambassadors that you want.
Yeah. So
I agree.
Totally. I mean,
we'll see if he gets 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that Finkel and Kai did get it. Yeah. And the last one would definitely be Huey Jensen, 100%, because he barely missed it. He barely missed it last time around, and you know he is definitely working towards coming back to the forefront of you know, playing Magic and being active again, which is something that I think that he's been really trying to do since he missed it by that point. Like, he wants his name to be out there, because he doesn't want people to just forget about him. And knowing that he came so close, you know, last year to getting it, like the extra work that he's put in to get it this year, I think is monumental. And I think that it's something that he has definitely put in enough work to make that be a thing and make that happen. So I really think that he deserves a spot.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that's the Pro Tour. Obviously, you know, we're just saying stuff. Who knows what's actually going to happen? But I mean, either way, it's definitely going to be exciting. And I can't wait to see what happens. It's always nice to see who gets in and watch the inductions, if you guys have ever watched that. But it's nice, and it's good to see. It's a good feel good moment for the community when, you know, people that we want elevated to this status are. So I think that'll be exciting when that all comes down.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So what would our podcast be without talking a little bit about Standard now? I do know that M14 obviously will be legal. M14 rule changes will also be legal as well, so keep that in mind when going to your FNMs or your tournaments this weekend. But we just wanted to take a look at some deck lists that were popping up. We each have a deck list that we wanted to talk about, and so yeah, we'll kind of go ahead and start it off. And Jordan, you want to kick us off with Jund?
Sure. I mean, like, we talked a little bit this about the... Oh, so I need to slow my roll. Oh my goodness. We talked a little bit about this deck before the show, and it's a Reed Duke deck, so I don't think it can be wrong. because Reed Duke can do no wrong by my book.
How many ground seals does it play?
Zero.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, zero ground seals. It can do no wrong. The thing that I like about this a lot is, I mean, obviously, Scavenging Ooze is just such a huge upgrade for us. It's a direct upgrade to Ground Seal, in my opinion. Unfortunately, you can't play them side by side because, you know, one shuts off the other. But having a dude on turn two is so good against, like, every aggro deck in the format. It sucks not having a play until turn three in such a crazy format. I shut down turn two Geist with Scavenging Ooze. I don't shut it down, but like, I now have a blocker unless they have Spectral Flight. And if they have Spectral Flight, I wasn't winning anyway. Doomblade. Like, this deck is, it's a black, green, red, good stuffs deck, and it's playing all the best cards in the format, I feel. I don't like Reed's inclusion of Mindsparker. I would just rather play Ruukthar, I think. That in double red is, like, it's not awkward for this mana base, but at the same time, like, you already have a triple green and a double black spell. I'd hate to keep playing that game of, man, I hope I have all my colors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, I like it. This is probably what I'm going to sleeve up for FNM if I get to go this week. I like Grafdigger's Cage because it's more of the same of a Scavenging Ooze like we talked about. I'm really excited to try Scavenging Ooze. It's going to be fun. I'm going to have fun gaining a billion life and then having a 2020 dude that gets Celestia Charmed, and it's going to be a case of the feel bads. But the only thing I'm really scared about being is being Hexproof, because if you don't have that Liliana, you don't have it. You know, you're just kind of like, oh, well, I die.
Yeah, but the sideboard's built for that as well. with the extra Liliana, because it's placed two Liliana main and then one side, and then it also has a Barter and Blood side. So I think that that's as prepared as you want to be for that deck. I mean, it's definitely going to be popular, but you can't dedicate 15 sideboard cards to it.
Oh, sure. I think the big thing is, like, if you don't, there's a lot of times I almost want to have 15 sideboard cards for it.
Because, yeah.
Because, like, if I don't have the three sideboard cards, I literally just die. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not how it works, obviously. Like,
right.
But, it's just kind of awkward. I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, I need to slow my roll. Good Christ. Like, I'm so excited.
I can't wait to play.
Just magic and red and blue and green and yeah, I don't know. I had a Pepsi about 10 minutes ago, so I'm kind of like,
okay, Pepsi. All right, okay, sure. Jesus.
More like heroin, apparently. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. Is Ban Hexproof a bad matchup for me? Should it be a bad matchup for me? Because
I don't think, like, unless you're playing a dedicated control deck, like, I don't know what new Ban Hexproof looks like, because as far as I know, they haven't fixed the mana base, and, like, that's the half reason why that deck loses it a lot, is that it defeats itself. They draw dudes but no pants, or pants but no dudes. They fold to a Supreme Verdict or a Bonfire of the Damned, which you also play four of. Like, you have answers, and I don't think it's necessarily that's unbeatable, but it's just like any other deck. Like, they nut draw you, and that's hard to beat. I think that's what a lot of this format is currently right now. It's just like, look at all these great cards that I can curve into. Let's fucking play some Magic, and like, that's what it is. I don't know, because I don't know how the metagame is going to break down for it. I think out the gate, people are going to be like, let's play Ban Hexproof, and then people are going to be like, let's fight Ban Hexproof, but I don't think anyone is metagaming it right now, just because they don't know. They don't know what's really going to be on top. So, it's an interesting concept, but I don't know. I've honestly considered sleeving up Ban Hexproof for this weekend. It's got such a huge target on his head, it just doesn't seem like the right choice, where I'd rather would just play something like Jund that has, decent matchups against most of the metagame, at least perceived decent matchups against most of the metagame that's out there currently, so.
Sure.
But that's where I kind of am on the
proposition. That's a fair point. Like, I haven't looked into much other besides Jund, I'm kind of in this card buying phase right now where I'm not really playing the game this month, but I'm just hoarding cards, trying to decide what I want to play. So I spent $200 on Shocklands actually last week. So
good.
So good.
You won't get them any cheaper than right now. They're at their lowest. They're only going to increase from here on out.
That's what I hear. I hope I'm right. I hope you guys are right about that, because it's flipping expensive.
We are right. Trust me. Trust me, when Modern Season rolls around and they're in another high demand, yeah. They'll be more expensive than you bought them now. And then when they rotate out of Standard, yeah, they're going to be more expensive.
Yeah, they're going to go way up, I guess, come next October.
Yeah, there's some of them, there's some of them that are still $15 right now when they're in Standard, so when they're not playing Standard, like, they might drop off a little bit, but they'll rise back up. Like, it's a good time to buy them.
Yeah, so that felt good to finally have a place out of all those. So now I can kind of, like, borrow cards into what I need.
Exactly.
It's a lot easier to borrow actual cards than it is lands, I feel like. So
I agree.
I don't know. What are you looking at, Morgan?
I pulled up an update to the Junk Aristocrats deck, because I think that... I don't know how strong Junk Reanimator is going to be after the introduction of Scavenging Ooze. It could not be affected that much. Like, if people are just swapping one for the other, then whatever. Like, you're just swapping one graveyard hate for another graveyard hate. You're not playing more. It's just different. Like, Jund playing Scavenging Ooze is nice, but we still can kill it with it can still be killed with Abrupt Decay just as well as the Ground Seal can. And even then, like, we probably changed, like, Junk Reanimator players probably changed it to a mid-range, sideboard at that point in time. But if people are afraid of it and they want to choose another deck, they might be playing Junk Aristocrats, just because it does get some interesting tools after M14. So it itself does get Scavenging Ooze, because obviously it's a green deck, so it's probably going to play Scavenging Ooze. But it's interesting play because the other new card that has been proposed for this deck by Brad Nelson himself is Archangel of Thune. And if you guys remember that one, it's the 3 white-white, 3/4 angel that has lifelink, and then whenever you gain life, put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control.
I told you this, but I want you to know that this is just so that they sell this card on Star City.
Like, we talked about
all the things that it could be better than. Like, Blood Baron is better than this card.
I agree that the card Archangel Thune is interesting and is a compelling argument for the Junk Aristocrats deck, because it does have a lot of life gain in it. You know, just through Blood Artist, not through Scavenging Ooze. But I feel that the better card for this deck right now is probably Blood Baron, because when we take a look at Blood Baron's natural enemies, you know, potentially control decks with Wraths, I don't think those would necessarily be very strong, because they didn't get a whole lot of new cards. When we look at decks like Jund that play Mizzium Mortars, Reed's list didn't have any in them. He wanted them for Dreadbores for more answers to Olivia, and then people playing the new Planeswalkers, just in case there was an influx of that. So no one's playing Mizzium Mortars. Control isn't necessarily a huge thing. So Blood Baron, with its relevant protections, like if you play Blood Baron against Reed Duke's Jund list, they have to bonfire it or make you sack it. With playing it in an Aristocrats deck, you're never going to have to sack it. You always have something else to sack. Liliana is terrible against Junk Aristocrats. And if you're not playing Mizzium, and like the only way that you can either kill it is miracling a bonfire, like, is that your plan? Like, bonfire for 4? I have a 4-drop that you can't deal with that's going to swing in every turn. I mean, I guess you could block it as well, but even then, like, you can't remove it. So I think that could be it. Maybe I want to slot it in something that makes it bigger, like they can enchant it in some way. So maybe that might be a better route to take. But it's a compelling argument for this deck. And I don't think Archangel Thune is bad. It just dies. Like, but I'd rather have something a little bit more resilient.
Well, the reason you don't want Archangel Thune is because you're not trying to sell cards for a website. that's the reason you would like to win the game.
I just want to say, I think that Archangel of Thune eventually will see its time.
Oh, yeah, most certainly.
I think the effect is just so good that even if it's not great right now, like, look at Thundermaw Hellkite, right? Like, when M13 first came out, people were like, oh, man, Thundermaw Hellkite, that's a pretty sweet card. But it didn't really go into any decks at the time, right?
Right.
And then after Innistrad block rotated out? Or after, oh, sorry, what was the Mirrodin block?
Yeah.
So it was in there. Yeah, so after that rotated out, it was just like, oh, man, you know, all of a sudden this card is just the nuts. So I think you could see something similar happen with the Archangel, even if it's not played at first. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to look to pick these up. Not right now, because they're pretty high. I think they're like $30.
Yeah.
But I think they'll come down a little bit.
100% pick them up over the Hydra.
Yeah. So speaking of the Hydra, so this kind of ties into the deck that I wanted to talk about. So I don't really understand the hype over the Hydra. I think it's a good card, but I don't think it's a $30 mythic good mm-hmm. card. You know, I think there might be some kind of, you know, niche decks that it goes into, but I don't think it's a staple by any means. But there was one deck list that caught my eye, and this is a deck that Brian Kibler talked about in his article last week, where it's a Jund color an evolved deck, and it's based around the Colonian Hydra and Xava, Rakdos Blood Witch,
mm-hmm.
which if you guys don't know what Exava does, it's a 3-3 unleash first strike haste, and then each other creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it has haste. So I think one of the ways to really break the Hydra in half is to somehow give it haste. So mm-hmm. playing an Exava on turn 3 or 4 followed up with by a Hydra is just huge. You have an 8-8 attacking, and it makes your Exava bigger. You know, and any other guys that you might have that, you know, might have an unleash counter on it or an evolve counter. So basically this whole deck is just built around guys that either evolve, so it's got like four experiment ones, four Gyrosage. It's got, Lotlith trolls, which can get counters on it. It's got Verals, the Scar Striped. This thing just looks crazy. Now, I don't know if this deck's actually good. I think he even said that it's kind of just the test list right now, but it just looks
great.
Huh. So, I mean, this looks like it'd be awesome just to play it, you know, in FNM, just to see how it goes. You know what I mean?
Right, like just have fun for a night and just blast.
Yeah, I mean, this just looks like, yeah, just so much fun to play. So it's pretty much just 34 creatures, three Domri Raid, and 23 lands. So, I don't know if that's optimal or not, but yeah, it looks like a lot of fun.
It looks pretty insane. I'm just looking at it right now, and it does look like I just saw a lot of fun. That's what I would
it's
call
something.
It. A lot of fun.
It's something.
Yeah. I honestly haven't paid too much attention to any of the potential standard lists, but that's one that did catch my eye. So.
Oh yeah, most certainly. The last thing that I want to talk about was something that me and Mike Kenny, obviously. We're talking about today, and he implored me that I did have to talk about this, so that he can do his little dance when he listens to the show. So we were talking about standard, and I asked him to break Liliana of the Dark Realms for me, because I have five of them now, and I would just like to play them at any point in time. You know, no big deal. So we decided that. You know, well, corrupts in the format, so yeah, I mean that's cool. Like, yeah, good for swamps. Well, you know, what else is still in the format for another 3 months? Chandra the Firebrand, which makes corrupt insane. So we were just like, well, let's just do it. Let's see how far we can go. Listen, guys.
It's deep. It's real deep, Dave.
We can do it. All right. we splash for some blue, and we get some We get some Snapcaster Mages in there, just the buyback stuff. Like, yeah, why not? We play some Key Runes. We get a Dimir Key Rune, Arrakis Key Rune for a secondary win condition off of Liliana. Especially with the Dimir one, like, get +X/+X for the number of swamps I control, unblockable, you're dead. Come on. So, come on. Get there. Come on.
So you just established like a 10-card combo. Should be on the front page of your Reddit with like, are we still doing bad standard combos?
Serious. So here's the list.
Sounds like a deck that's really good against red green aggro.
Right? We play all four mutilates? Come on. Play some Devil's Slice, some barters.
Just so everybody has some context for this conversation. I woke up from a nap today to like 15 new text messages and a group text from these two going back and forth on like, this deck would be insane. And I'm just reading it going, yeah, if you have like 90 billion pieces in your opening hand, like, it sounds so much fun, but your level of excitement scares me. Makes me generally uncomfortable. Hey,
he's just trying to pump up those Lilianas, you know?
Yeah, come on.
It's fine.
I'm just trying to sell some cards here.
He's just trying to Star City it. Come on.
You should buy your Liliana of the Dark Realms from Capital or Comic Town in Columbus, Ohio. We don't have any affiliation or anything.
They have a whole stack of them. Just go buy them now. They're shooting up. Lady Planeswalker combo. It's happening.
You heard it here first.
Speculation station. Oh my.
All right. Well, we know that our last show was definitely long, and we kind of just wanted to finish it up here, and move on to our question of the week that we all love to ask. And since we have Dave on, and Dave is a leader of our Cube community here, in Columbus, Ohio, something that I was thinking about is casual formats like Cube, like EDH, can they help improve your skills in constructed formats? Because obviously Cube, if you play Cube, you're going to get good at drafting. Like, so I know that it can definitely improve your play in limited formats, Cube specifically. But, you know, can these formats help improve your game in more than one format? So what do you guys think about it?
Alright, I'll go.
Silence,
I mean,
this is definitely Dave.
No, I don't play EDH or Commander, whatever it's called
right.
these days, so I don't have anything to say about that. But yeah, Cube for sure, I think definitely can help your game. I mean, not even for just constructed, but for getting more skills overall. I think the thing about Cube that I love is that it's very complex. Obviously, you have cards going all the way back to the beginning of Magic, so you have so many different interactions and kind of keywords and all these things to kind of keep up with. So it really keeps you on your toes. You know, you really have to kind of keep on thinking about different interactions.
Okay.
So it gets you out of just going into that autopilot mode. You know what I mean?
No, yeah.
I think that's easy to fall into, especially when you've been playing if you're just playing standard a lot, it's kind of easy just to go into autopilot and just, you know, you only have a certain set of cards that you have to think about. But with Cube, it's always changing, and just so many different things to think about. I think it could just improve your game, just overall, you know, I would say.
No, I mean, when we Cube, I definitely feel like I have to pay attention to infinitely more things than when I either just do a standard draft, you know? There is just so much more going on. And I think the same goes for EDH or other just rando wacky things. There's more going on, like you said, than in your standard match. You have to pay better attention to the game state. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I just like the idea of playing with older cards. I think that a lot of the time, if you only play standard, you never get exposed to, you know, kind of the history of Magic, and I think that is really important in learning card interaction, especially with, you know, new cards and new sets getting released, with, you know, new keywords, new abilities. A lot of times people will be like, oh, well, this card is just a fixed or a worse or a better of XYZ card. Now, if you already know how XYZ, you know, card works, then, you know, you have a huge advantage over someone that's just like, oh, I've never seen this card, and I've never, you know, seen how this actually operates or works. And I think that is a huge thing to get exposed to, which you can easily do by playing, you know, EDH, which you can easily do by playing Cube, because they are centered usually around older cards.
Right. No, I think it's an unequivocal yes, right? You're just better at the game because of these things.
Oh yeah, most certainly. I mean, and Cube is so, it can be so diverse and so, really difficult to master. It really pushes you to want to play tight and want to play good. On the limited aspect, it really pushes you to want to draft good and learn what cards do. And I think wanting to learn what cards do, it puts you so far ahead of a lot of people. A lot of people just want to play, powerful cards and just want to have, the best deck. But not a lot of people necessarily want to know what their cards do and understand interactions and create new interactions, you know, and find those things that break formats.
I'm sorry. I heard you say people just want to have the best dick. what? I think we missed the point entirely here. This is... Cube does not make you have the best dick, guys. As a guy who's played Cube, that is not true.
That's not what we're talking about here?
Right.
No wonder Dave wants to play Cube every week. Oh my gosh, my mind is blown.
With Cube, I mean, it definitely helps a lot with Limited as well, too, because when you're drafting, you kind of just need to draft the best overall deck. It's not just about drafting the best cards or... Oh, I opened the best bombs because there's just so many bombs in that type of format.
Yeah, really,
Yeah, it's about building a cohesive deck or maybe a specific strategy that you're going for, which I think actually, if anybody's drafted Modern Masters a decent amount, it's very it's very similar to Cube in that, you know, there's so many different archetypes and things like that that you can draft. So,
yeah, I agree. And I think that that's huge, because it teaches you, like, when you go to FNM and you, like, you open that bomby mythic that's $30 right now, you're like, I'm just going to take this. Even if it's, like, the third pack, first pick, and you're just like, it doesn't fit with my deck at all, but I'm just going to take it. But in Cube, like, there's none of that. So that teaches you, you know, how to draft around an archetype, how to draft for your deck and not just take money cards. So you get to that, you learn that mentality, and then when you have a competitive draft, you know, you already have that mentality built in, where some people are going to struggle with picks while you're going to be confident with them. And, you know, they're not going to have that same mentality, because you've already done this before. This is just a Cube draft, but with just a, you know, the current set or whatever. You don't have to worry about being one of those jewelers that are just going to be like, well, I know this is like top 8 draft, but I'm still going to take this $30 card. Because you're better than that.
Right. Well, I mean, another way to get around that too is if you're drafting with friends, like not necessarily like a store FNM draft or whatever, but
well, that's true.
If you just get a group of friends together and then you just, you know, you agree to just backdraft the rares or whatever, then you don't have to worry about, oh man, should I take this foil rare or whatever, you know, foil Mutavault or something, instead of taking, you know, a card that would be really good for your deck or a removal spell or something.
Right.
Certainly.
So, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that sucks about drafting in a store is, like, you open that $30 card that's, like, off-color pack 3, and you're like, man, I don't need this, but if I get this, it pays for my draft. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I totally hear both sides of that. Mm-hmm. Practice-wise, it sucks, but money-wise, you're like, yeah!
Yeah. But I think that, personally speaking, you know, since I really started coming to the Cube Nights and stuff like that, like, I've gotten better at drafting. Just in general, like being able to understand archetypes and like stick to an archetype and it'd be something that's fruitful. And I've understood like board states better and just like knowing when to play things, and it's become, you know, I think something that's been very profitable for me as a competitive player. Like I just feel more confident in playing my cards regardless of the format, just because of like having that experience of playing with these with a bunch of different cards and like having these crazy things happen in front of me and be like, well, I want to know how to do that. Like it just exposes you to so much. Plus, it really helps that like a lot of people that build cubes are, I would say, very knowledgeable about card interactions and are very knowledgeable about good play. And I think that if you do find a good cube group that has a solid cube, that you would just develop as a player by nature of the people you're around.
Yeah,
it's a lot of scouring gatherer, I'll tell you that. I think any cube designer or anybody who has a cube will tell you that, you know, the countless hours.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just on gather.
See a lot of random stuff.
Probably a lot of cards. I mean, like, what, they made that? Why?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been playing forever, and I'll still come across some random Legends card. Like, wait, what? This is a card?
Better put it in the cube. Like,
no, not if it's from Legends.
Now, as far as EDH goes, I think that's just a pure exercise in like card evaluation, because like you'll kind of know by playing EDH, like, you just see these big bomby things, and, like, you have to realize that when you see those cards again in like, standard sets and, like, new sets that come out, you realize, like, hey, that's probably not standard playable. Like, that's, like, a card that my friend plays in his, you know, Maelstrom Wanderer EDH deck. Probably not going to see standard play. But, it definitely will let you know, like, kind of weed out, you know, these huge bomby cards that are meant for that format, away from the, you know, sleek, pushed standard cards that you should be probably looking towards. So I think that's also an interesting thing. I think EDH definitely probably lends itself a little less to being competitive. But, yeah, it's still something that I think you can do as at the very least, like a release, like a just something to do very that's pure fun and pure casual. Something that we like to do a lot during our downtime in tournaments, other than play Cards Against Humanity, is do Type 4. And I think Type 4 is a lot of fun, even though I completely am terrible at it, but it's just something that's very similar to EDH. Basically, you get a stack of cards, you draw five of them, you have unlimited mana, you can only play a spell a turn. You kind of just go. And it's a lot of fun. And even if like EDH is something that you do in between rounds at a tournament just to wait till something happens, I think that's also, you know, just fine, as a way to keep your competitive edge, just to cool off between, you know?
Yeah, it's funny with Type 4. I have to, like, literally read every other card, because I don't know what I need to do.
Yeah.
But for anybody who's never played that, it's just basically all of just the biggest things you can do in Magic. It's just all, like, these, like, 9-plus mana spells, or, like, all this stuff.
Oh, right.
So it's pretty crazy.
And a bunch of counter spells.
Yeah, and a bunch of counter spells.
Yeah, that's not fun. Like, I've played it a few times, and it's a blast, right? Like, this one's, when you get turn two'd, and you're like, oh, well, that was that, and then you're just, like, starting over again. Like, man.
Yeah, that's why it's just every kind of spell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spell blast you, bro. Yeah.
Alright, well, I think that was a pretty fruitful discussion, as far as that goes. I say that all the time. I apologize for our listeners. I do say that all the time.
And what's the other thing you say all the time? As far as that goes. Sorry. Oh, no, that's exactly what you're talking about. Oh, God!
You're saying it.
Oh, God! I'm going to mute my microphone.
All right. No, I don't think... Dave Nolan, you're still queued for the Pro Tour, so you're not doing anything this weekend.
I'm still, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought I'd ask. you're not doing anything this weekend because you have to work, and that's fairly lame.
Yeah, man. Like, I have next Saturday off, but that does me zero good.
There's stuff going on next Saturday, I think, still. Was that the 27th?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still stuff going on. Don't worry, we'll find something for you to do. on the other hand, I am still planning on going to a tournament up near the Cleveland area at Empire Games. And it's a huge standard tournament. It's a TCG player platinum event, actually, that a Carl at Empire Games is actually hosting. Our winner gets a case, so why not, right? Like, you get packs just for entering, I believe that is the case as well. So, like, absolutely no reason not to go to this event unless you work. Or don't care, but it's pretty huge for standard, and it's new standard, so, like, there's just, like, gonna be a whole lot of stuff that's going on. Like, I just want to get exposed to this new standard format and figure it out as soon as I possibly can, so that's why I'm making the trek out there. Plus, the prize payout's just insane, so there's no reason not to.
Right. Yeah, man, like, playing Magic's fun. You know what's not fun is working.
Yeah, I've heard that. But yeah, so, I think, you know, we definitely want to keep this episode short, and I hope we've done that here. But, you know, thanks everyone again for listening, and, you know, we appreciate Dave being on for stepping in for Mike. He is at a work conference, and I just wanted to, you know, say that we'll be back next week. Mike will be back with us next week as well, and we will regale you with more of our stories. And you have a great night, and thanks for listening.